is the Next Trip Podcast with aviation insiders Doug and Drew. Together, with more than 40 years of industry experience, they are creating a network for other av geeks and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. All thoughts and opinions are their own.
Good day and welcome to Boarding Pass 104, operating on November 22nd, 2021. This is Doug, and I'm here with my fellow industry insider, Drew. We're two av geeks creating a network for airline, airplane, airport, and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. Drew, the holiday travel season has officially kicked off, at least in the U.S. I think it's safe to say things feel much more normal this year.
They do feel normal. My biggest problem this week was where I'm going to get Christmas lights. So if that's my biggest problem, that's pretty normal, right?
Yeah.
If the traffic going to the department store is my problem. We're going to cover this in our opening topic along with a game we want to play with the listeners. But before we get to that, Doug, how was your week? I think you got both some plane spotting and some flying in.
I did, yeah. And I mentioned that I had my base visit last week. My initial base visit went down a couple hours early. Actually, right after we finished recording with Roxy, I headed down there. Just like I did a couple months ago, brought a camping chair, set it up on the bay path, you know, at San Francisco on the bay.
It was a perfect day again.
Oh, it was beautiful, yeah. And I brought my dad with. We just sat there for a couple hours. Drew, one thing that I noticed was the variety of international airlines. Every single time I'm at San Francisco during I've been there during the pandemic, it seems like I'm seeing more and more airlines come back. Like I saw a TAP A330neo come in, Air Portugal 330neo, SAS, Swiss, Turkish, all these airlines that haven't been there for months, years, about a year and a half plus. The fact that there's a Lisbon to San Francisco flight now, that means that Europe is back. Europe is back.
Well, Lisbon is a prime example of one of those secondary or tertiary cities. Mm-hmm. So if you're seeing those, it is really coming back. Unfortunately, hasn't come back everywhere. And we're going to talk about this in our stories. Back to my Christmas lights. You know, I told you I was annoyed by the people that put their Christmas lights up right after Halloween.
Yeah.
But that's me, because I don't want to be stuck, you know, with no lights. But guess what I did? You know, this is so efficient. I'm so proud of myself. So I got the lights where there's an app and you can change the color.
Oh, yeah.
I'm never going to take them down, because right now they'll be like a fall. I'll put oranges, mm-hmm. you know, and reds, and then I'll change it to Christmas.
Yeah.
And then change it to, I don't know, Valentine's Day with pink. You know, pink. So I never have to take them down.
It'll be green.
How cool is that?
Green for St. Patrick's Day.
And I have to vent with you an annoyance, a nuisance that I see all the time with people. And I hope you're not one of these people in the parking lots at stores. I'm just trying to get in, find a spot, get in, get out. But then I have to wait for these people that are backing into the spot.
Oh, yeah.
Are you one of the people that back into a spot?
I am not. I'm laughing, though, because my dad is. And I get so annoyed when he does that, because it takes extra time. I'm like, why are you doing that? I understand it from a getting out standpoint. That way you're not going to rear end someone as you're backing out. Yeah, it's
I was just thinking about this logically, right? And I know these are people like your dad that probably think ahead more than I do. So when they're coming out of the store, it's a straight shot. They can just drive out, right?
Yeah.
But it takes more time to back into a small spot versus when you're leaving. When you back out, you have the whole alleyway or whatever that you can back into.
Yeah.
It's just two movements versus three or four. And I hate to say this, in the DC area, we have some bad drivers. I'll sit there for like 2 minutes while they do like three tries to get into that spot. It's like, I just want to park. Can you get out of the way?
I have a feeling that we're probably going to get some feedback for this one. I'm sure we have listeners out there who are those people that you were talking about. But going back to your Christmas lights, Drew, what I know we talked about the supply chain a couple of weeks ago. I flew down to San Diego and back just a day trip on Sunday, flew over Long Beach. Drew, there were, I couldn't even count all of them, probably four or five dozen container ships just out off the coast. And the port itself was relatively empty.
Well, last time we talked about this, it was 50 ships that were waiting. Just reading this article, is getting ready for this, it's up to 80 now. So it may have been more when you were above.
Yeah, I believe it. And they were anchored everywhere in the bay. And even on the other side of Catalina Island, it was crazy to see flying over.
It is so inefficient. But, you know, we work for the airlines. And we all know cargo is like the gravy, right? cargo is the icing on the cake, because we transport passengers and their bags. If we can fill the empty spots with phones from China or, you know, asparagus from California, that's like cha-ching. Mm-hmm. So we're cashing in that. But I'm going to save that because we have a whole story about that.
Drew, as we mentioned in the opening, the Thanksgiving holidays this Thursday in the U.S., the Wednesday before Thanksgiving and the Sunday and Monday after Thanksgiving are historically the single busiest travel days of the year from an aviation standpoint. I'm usually the stats guy on the show, Drew, but why don't you take a crack at some of the numbers this time?
All right. Well, we all know 2019 broke records, and it's unfair because we always compare everything to 2019, mm-hmm. right? Which was a unique year. 2019 broke records regarding both holiday travel and the year in general, which is why we consistently compare current numbers to 2019. According to AAA, which for our international listeners is the American Automobile Association, this year's Thanksgiving travel is expected to be nearly as busy as pre-pandemic, Doug. An estimated 53.4 million travelers will travel between this Wednesday and Sunday, down only 2 million from 2019. Nearly 5 million of those will travel by plane. You know, that's only 10%. We got to raise that.
Yeah.
Only 10% are traveling by air. This is an 80% increase over last year and only down 9% from 2019. Doug, so we're about 90% of where we were on a banner year, 2019. So we're on the way to recoveries. We just need to keep this going.
Yeah, and the TSA numbers show that. They've been slowly creeping back to 2019 numbers. A couple of days this year already have been above 2019. Generally speaking, though, recent daily screenings are somewhere between 80 and 90% of 2019 numbers. Drew, let's play a game with our listeners. We want the listeners to guess what you think the highest number of TSA screenings will be on the highest day this week during the Thanksgiving travel period. We'll send the winner some next trip swag. I think that we both have a guess for ourselves, but let's talk about these reference numbers just to give people a little bit more of an idea of what to guess.
Right, just to give you a clue before you pick. Now, once again, you're picking just one day. You don't have to pick the day. Just pick a number of these 3 days, right, Doug?
Pick.
What do you think the number
will be? Pick a seven-digit number of what you think the highest screenings will be over the Thanksgiving holiday on a single day.
And for reference, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving 2019, we had 2,624,250 screenings. The Sunday after and the Monday after, Sunday after was actually busier, 2,882,915 screenings. And then the Monday after, 2,591,470. For reference, the highest screenings in the COVID era were on August 1st of this year, Doug.
Yeah, right? This year.
Was it 2021? Yeah. Yep. With 2,238,462. Once again, 2019, the highest of those 3 days, we had almost 3 million, 2.8 million screenings.
Yeah.
Are we going to share our numbers now?
Yeah. What's your number? I'm curious what your prediction is.
My number is 2,550,000.
Okay. Mine's very close. Mine is 2,548,253.
Okay. So you're doing like the Price is Right where you bid just like a couple dollars below me. That's not fair.
I had it on my phone. I wanted it written down. So that way you didn't feel like I was undershooting your number.
Okay. But we're not going to do the Price is Right. You overbid. It's just going to be who's closer.
It's who's closest. Yeah. Whatever the number is, we'll figure out. And we're not part of the competition. If we're closer, we're not going to say, okay, sorry. We're not going to send the winner something. We will send someone some next trip swag.
For those of you that listen to us, you guys communicate with us in different ways, whatever is easiest for you. But if you haven't done so, the best way is to go to www.nexttripnetwork.com and just hit contact, or you can put a comment to the show notes of this episode. Whatever's easiest for you, we'll get it from you.
Yeah, and try and get it in by this Wednesday, because that way we know that Wednesday is going to be one of the busier days. So please get it in before the TSA data is released on Thursday. It'll come out on Thursday morning. Mm-hmm. So just make sure that you get it in before Thursday morning.
Before Thursday morning. Okay. Yep. Yeah. That's good. Screenings are increasing, which is awesome. But Doug, this is really good news. It's not just the U.S. that is rebounding. There's some exciting news out of Asia, which has been the slowest region of the world to recover. What do we find, Doug?
Yeah, Drew, this is from Reuters. Singapore Airlines has 79% of its fleet ready to use on any demand increase. The airline CEO said it is ready to quickly capitalize on any increase in demand. In addition to the fleet, 92% of pilots and 85% of cabin crew are back with the airline and fully qualified to fly. Singapore is currently operating at just 37% of pre-COVID capacity, increasing to 43% in December. Drew, even that, we've talked about Singapore not doing a lot of flying. The fact that they're up to almost 50% in December, I feel like it's been very quiet. It's been a very quiet ramp up and increase, but we're starting to see Singapore flights to more places in the world. Recently opened quarantine-free vaccination travel lanes with the UK, US, Germany, Australia, and South Korea have helped that capacity increase. And Malaysia is going to be added to that list on the 29th of this month. The biggest thing weighing on a full reopening is China, which the CEO believes is still a little ways off. True.
So I told you my mom went rogue on me, right?
Yeah.
Because I told her, don't travel. It's too complicated. There's still a lot of stuff going on. What does she do? She calls me from SFO.
Trying to get to Sri Lanka.
And then she didn't have all her paperwork. So she went and she's there. She's having a great time. She's coming back tomorrow. Mm-hmm. She's representative. She's 75 years old and she had to go.
Yeah.
There's pent up demands. I'm really hoping for a big bounce back in the Asia market. Now we're talking about Singapore Airlines. Did you hear that they're going to start flying their 737 MAX pretty soon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So Singapore Airlines is flying narrow bodies, which is, I don't think that has happened since they flew the 757.
Yeah. I think we talked about this earlier this year. Yeah. 757 was the last one that they flew.
Yeah. But you know how we talk about the 787 being the hero during the pandemic, right? Because it was smaller, more efficient.
Yeah.
This thing is going to be their hero because places where they were flying an A330 regionally, they're going to be able to offer a first-class product on this 737 to cities like Colombo, Kuala Lumpur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, regional. Yeah.
And get this, lie-flat seats on a 737.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I didn't even know that any airline offered 737 lie-flat seats, and I looked into it, Doug.
Copa.
Panama. Copa. Yeah, you knew that?
Yeah.
And then Fly Dubai will have them. United, I'm not sure. I've heard that they might, but nothing's come out officially.
I think United probably will, because the talk is when they get the MAX 10s, they're going to use those on the premium transcon routes instead of not necessarily fully replacing 777s on those and 78s on those routes.
Yeah.
But you know, San Francisco to Newark and JFK, LA to Newark, JFK, every airline minus Alaska has some sort of lay flat premium product on that.
Right.
And if United's going to use the MAX 10 to replace some of the 757 flying and things like that, they're going to have to put a premium product on there.
Yeah, there are 100. United has ordered 100 of these. A portion of those may be decked out. Is more than
250.
Wow. So they could definitely have a sub fleet of those that maybe do transcons.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we're telling you what to do, United, but
hint.
All right. But this is a good transition, Doug, to our next story. Singapore wants to fly this plane to China and Indonesia because that's one of their regional routes where this would be very useful right now with the lower load factors. But it couldn't go to China yet because China doesn't accept the 737 MAX.
Mm-hmm.
But now, this next story, this is from Bloomberg. China's CAAC is now satisfied with the Boeing 737 MAX changes. The Civil Aviation Administration of China says it is satisfied with design changes Boeing has introduced on the 737 MAX. The CAAC, or let's just call it CAC, has asked carriers to provide feedback by the 26th on a proposed airworthiness directive that outlines procedures for pilots in case systems fail. Boeing says it is continually working with regulators in countries and regions that have yet to return the MAX to service. The company is encouraged by the developments and hopes the MAX will return to service in China by the end of the year. That's great news.
Yeah, that's huge because China is one of the largest markets for the 737 MAX, and they have been the slowest to return the MAX to service. Drew, I'm wondering if part of this was just they were watching other parts of the world, like Europe and the US, to see if the MAX continued to operate safely as it returned to service.
Right. Yeah, probably. Yeah, they're being so cautious. It's like, I'm wondering if they're being overly cautious or they're giving their own manufacturer who's starting to make narrow bodies an opening.
Some time.
Yeah.
I can tell you though, and I think we've mentioned this, I've flown the MAX. I've piloted the MAX. I love it. It is such a great airplane to fly. In fact, what did I tell you? I'm leaving on a trip this afternoon, actually, right after we record. I'm heading down to the airport. I only have one MAX on this pairing. And what did I say?
You're disappointed.
I was bummed about it. I was of the seven flights, only one of them is on a MAX, and I was disappointed about that. It is such a great airplane.
Right. Same thing when I'm booking my non-rev travel. I'm excited when I see a MAX. It's like, oh, cool, something new. It's just a little bit of a difference, but just enough to make the 737 exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Boeing has 370 of these that are not delivered, thanks to COVID. And about 120 of the 370 are going to China. And we talked about if it takes forever, maybe other airlines should lease them. Mm-hmm. But thankfully, that's not going to be needed if China is going to start taking these.
Yeah, I'm curious who will be left in the world to certify the MAX after China. I don't think everyone is there yet. We'll have to look into this, but the China is the last major market to recertify the MAX.
Indonesia has not, and that was one of the countries where one of those two crashes was in Indonesia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ethiopia, I believe, has cleared it to fly again. I'm not 100% sure. That was the other country where there was a crash. We'll have to look it up.
Yeah, in Indonesia, not recertifying it will impact Singapore, though, and their aspirations of flying the MAX regionally.
Yeah, exactly. That's two of the countries they mentioned. But Singapore itself cleared it to fly in September. Mm-hmm. So the Singaporean government is fine with it.
It's fine with it, yeah.
Is fine with it. Yeah, Singapore Airlines, I think they are itching to get these flying now because load factors are still low and this will fit. You know, what's really cool about this is the 737 does a lot for Singapore. It will maintain these business markets with a quality product. I don't think these business travelers within Asia would appreciate their route being replaced by Scoot. You know, no disrespect to Scoot because they have a certain segment, but a lot of these markets are business markets within Asia. If you have a choice, are you flying a 737 MAX Singapore Airlines Legacy with a lie flat seat in first, or are you flying a 787-9 on Scoot with a recliner seat?
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's a good one, right?
This wasn't in the script. I didn't have time to think about this.
And I just thought about asking you that now because I'm thinking about it.
I would say I would do the 737 because
I would too.
I love the 7-8, but I have, as you mentioned, you didn't even know that there were lay flat business seats on 737s in the world.
Yeah.
I want to see that. I want to try that product. I want to see what it's like. And again, I've never flown Singapore, and so I would of course like to experience the true Singapore product and not their low cost alternative.
Yeah, and just to take a step back, these Singapore Airlines owns a subsidiary called Silk Air, which was folded back into the main airline. So Silk Air is gone. Singapore Airlines will take these 737s, which Silk Air already has. So they're going to be taking some 737-800s and these MAXs, and it's going to be a Singapore Airlines product with Singapore Airlines flight attendants, the catering, all that.
Yeah.
Top notch. I would definitely, it wasn't a hard decision for me. I would take the 737 MAX on Singapore Airlines versus a wide body on Scoot, which is shocking to most listeners, I'm sure.
I know. But, we're going to catch flack for this one, too. This is going to be a very polarizing episode, I feel like.
I can tell you right now.
Cars backing in to flying on a 737 over a 7-8.
Well, yeah, we got to create some drama. So as I'm speaking, Tyler is scripting his Twitter slam to us. It's like, you guys preach about wide bodies, but you'll fly, you know, you will fly any plane that has a lie flat seat.
All right. Well, let's shift to a different airplane manufacturer and go wide body here. This is from the Financial Times. Airbus secures first commitment for freighter version of the A350. Boeing has long dominated the cargo aircraft market, something Airbus hopes to change. In fact, 90% of the world's dedicated freighter capacity is currently provided by Boeing aircraft. Boeing is expected to launch a freighter version of the 777X in the coming months to compete with the A350 freighter. Air cargo volumes hit an all-time high in March. The cost of air cargo, once 12.5 times more expensive than ground shipments in pre-pandemic days, is now only 3 times more expensive thanks to a large increase in air cargo supply, mainly from cargo-only flights utilizing passenger aircraft. Older Boeing airframes continue to receive orders as well. DHL ordered 9 767-300s, and Emirates ordered 2 777 freighters over the weekend. All of this is coming at the Dubai Air Show, which we talked with Roxy about last week.
Right.
Drew.
Yeah, there's more cargo news than passenger news.
Yeah. What do you think about an A350 freighter? What I think it's going to look interesting.
I think it's going to look interesting, too. I'm trying to imagine what I would think it is from the distance. I would probably think it's, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'd know it's an A350 right away.
Yeah.
But Doug, we have to go back. This is a number that shocked us when we first did some research on cargo. For the listeners, do you know that 50% of air cargo is carried by passenger airlines? Mm-hmm. I never knew that. 50%. And as we speak, we're still 70% below the pre-COVID levels of passenger flights. Mm-hmm. So there's all that loss of cargo capacity. These cargo airlines are filling in the blanks, and some regular airlines like United were flying all cargo flights. Mm-hmm. We talked to Roxy. Her airline was using several 777s that had passenger cabins, using the passenger cabin for cargo. Yeah. My concern, Doug, is they're ramping up, but this demand isn't going to be there forever. So what do you do after it goes back down? You know?
Yeah, well, I think that Airbus is probably looking at this saying that they need something to compete with Boeing. Not saying that it's going to be a giant market, but Airbus hasn't had a new build freighter. Well, I guess they have the A330 freighter now, but as this number showed, 90% of the world's dedicated freighter capacity is Boeing aircraft. The other 10% is converted DC-10s and MD-11s and some of the older A300s, but that's really it. Everything else is a Boeing product. Now you've got Amazon, who's flying 737s that are converted freighters. FedEx and UPS have 757s and now 777s and 747s. And you can see where it's dominated completely by Boeing. What I will say, though, Drew, is yes, the demand is high right now. And you're asking, will it stay that way? It may not be at the height that it is right now, but I think that cargo capacity and demand will continue to grow as the world grows, as it becomes more interconnected, as these supply chain issues get figured out, and the rest of the world gets out and the world gets out of COVID, and we get back to that normal growth pattern. Yeah, I definitely see it. And I think in the article, and we didn't write it down, I think Airbus said that they predict the need for like 900 new freighters over the next several years. Mm. Whether they're new builds or converted freighters, but they're saying on top of the freighter capacity today, they expect the need for an additional 900 over the next several years.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the demand at some point is going to plateau, but I think we're seeing something that is sustained of shipping moving more from ships to airplanes. And I'll tell you why. You and I are probably an example. Like when I order something online, I want it immediately. Mm-hmm. I know this is a first world problem.
Yeah.
But I've got to have it immediately. If it's going to take 2 weeks, I'll drive to the mall. Mm-hmm. Right. I'll drive to the mall and buy a sweater if that's what I need. But if I can get it tomorrow, absolutely. I'll pay a little bit extra. And as the world comes back and as economies improve, more people are going to want that. So I think this is something that is sustained.
Well, that's why Amazon has partnered with Sun Country to use 737s. For some of the movement, they don't need a 767 that's inefficient. Now they still are using 767s to go into smaller cities like Sacramento. I mean, just up the road for me, I see Amazon 737s there quite often now, because they're using it. Yeah. There's a huge distribution center in Sacramento. They're using that to go to places like Stockton and Fresno, smaller cities that they don't need to run a 767 that's inefficient, but throw a bunch of 737s on little short routes like that, moving that product so that you can get it the next day. Yeah, definitely a need for that.
Yep, and all these 767s, for example, that American retired, the 777s that Delta retired, they're probably going to have another home.
Mm-hmm.
hauling cargo.
Yeah.
But what's great, I mean, from a purely AVGI perspective now, thanks to the cargo carriers, we still get to see the MD-11 flying around. So Tyler, who takes pictures in Phoenix, he's saying that is his favorite aircraft to picture because probably it's so unique now, mm-hmm. even more than the 747.
Yeah.
All right, Doug, let's transition to back to passenger airlines. We talked about high volumes and freight. We also have high volumes for customers. This story is from CNN Business. Airlines offer staff holiday incentives after operational meltdowns. Doug, as we discussed on previous episodes, Southwest and American, two airlines that have had recent crew scheduling meltdowns, have been creatively finding ways to incentivize employees to work extra over the expectedly busy holiday travel season. This is a perk that I would accept if our airline offered it. Southwest is offering up to 120,000 miles in its Rapid Rewards program to meet its holiday scheduling needs. American is saying it will give flight attendants holiday premium pay. Flight attendants that work between November 23rd and 29th and December 22nd and January 2nd will receive 150% pay for those days. That's pretty awesome. Flight attendants with no absences between November 15th and January 2nd will receive 300% of their pay during the previously mentioned 2 weeks. No one thinks about us lowly ops people that do everything else for you glamorous flight attendants and pilots. But American is also offering their ops people, all the people that do the services, $1,000 for all their other employee groups, which is nice. Now, here's bad news. American pilots voted down the offer as far as the pilots are concerned. They're instead insisting that the airline needs to change crew scheduling permanently, not just offer incentives for pilots to work more than they already do. A spokesman for their union, the Allied Pilots Association, said, "We want flying to get done, but we don't want tickets sold that can't be fulfilled." Interesting. Doug, your thoughts?
Yeah, I want to talk about the points or the miles first, and then we can go talk about the pilot side. I've been thinking about this a lot back and forth. Would I rather get extra pay or the miles? I think I would prefer the premium pay over the miles. And here's why. Because we have non-rev benefits, we have employee discounts, we have all those things. And at least you and I, we put a lot of our spend on credit cards that get us points anyways. And so if we're in a pinch and we need to use the miles to get home or get to a wedding or something like that, we have that ability. I would like to be able to get that extra pay to help pay my bills, to help do things for my family that I need.
True.
Not necessarily miles that aren't always easy to redeem, that sometimes are more expensive. I don't know. That's just my thought. But it is interesting to see Southwest getting creative, saying that they'll offer miles to employees who work more.
Yeah, this is a good thing. But this, and I have heard that the flight attendants are also saying this, they would rather have more staffing so they don't have to work as much versus getting this bonus.
Yeah.
Now, some airlines have prepared for the holidays better. They're not having these crises. Mm-hmm. I think some airlines took a gamble and hired a bunch of pilots and hired a bunch of flight attendants or didn't let as many go. And they're more prepared. But, you know, it was a gamble because we didn't know where COVID was going.
Yeah.
But we did talk about American November 1st, something like 1,800 flight attendants were coming back to the schedule. Company. So they'll probably be trained.
Yeah.
How does this affect you? Are you going to see more work during the next month, you think? Less reserve, or what do you think?
Yeah, Drew, the way that my schedule was built for this month, and we're going to talk about crew scheduling for our main topic, but I can tease it a little bit right now. I'm on reserve this month, which means I don't have a line. I get the schedule that the airline gives me. I have days that I'm on reserve, and I have days that I'm off. My reserve schedule was very much to the back end of November. I was only on reserve for a couple of days in the first half of the month. And I'm basically on reserve now from here until the end of the month. I have 2 days off next week, but that's it, the rest of the month. And the airline, if you look at the numbers and the way they did it, the majority of the people, there were certain days where they only had a couple people on reserve. The whole last half of the month, they've got a dozen plus people every single day to on reserve to get ready for possible issues around the holidays.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So yeah, I definitely will be flying more in these next 2 weeks than I have the whole first part of the month.
Doug has been doing something called, what is it?
Aggressive pickup.
Violent
aggressive pickup.
Mm-hmm. So an aggressive pickup is apparently you see some trips that are open. Mm-hmm. So instead of waiting on reserve to be called for who knows what, Doug goes in and he's looking at Costa Rica, Belize, Maui, and you took the best that was available, which was pretty cool, right? It's Boston, Portland, two overnights.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it sounded pretty cool.
Today is my first day on reserve on this block, and yesterday I saw this trip open up that it does a Vegas turn, and then we end up in Portland tonight, and then tomorrow we do Portland, Chicago, Boston, overnight in Boston. And actually, I'm excited about this because on, I don't even know what day it is today, on Friday, we fly mm-hmm. Boston, LA, which I looked it up, Drew. It's 2,700 miles, which is longer, which is longer than the West Coast to Hawaii. That's
so crazy.
Drew, the flight is blocked at 6.5 hours. That I would argue of in the US at least, that is probably the longest 737 flight, if not one of the longest in the world. I know Copa from Panama City up and down North and South America probably have longer flights, but I would venture to guess that Boston to LA is one of the longest 737 flights in the world. So I am excited about
that. So you said that was 2,700 miles, mm-hmm. and I believe the maximum range is about 3,700.
Yeah, it depends on the type, on the variant. Yeah.
But you were also, now we're in a little bit of a tangent, but that's okay. You were saying it's four times as much work, the Boston to LAX flight versus the Maui to San Francisco flight, even though they're both long flights. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because you're traveling over such busy airspace.
But yeah, busy airspace. You're constantly talking to different controllers. You're getting reroutes. You have a lot more traffic that you have to deal with. Whereas from Hawaii to the West Coast or West Coast to Hawaii, all you're doing is just monitoring your navigation, making sure that you're not straying off course. And every hour you check in with your position, and then you don't talk mm-hmm. to, you don't talk to someone for another hour. Whereas on this flight, I'm going to be on the radio, or if I'm the pilot flying, the captain will be on the radio probably every couple of minutes, checking in with different centers, requesting altitude changes, things like that.
Before we go to the main topic, really good news story from American. We've been waiting for this, Doug. American is serving Sundays again. So starting November 10th, mm-hmm. they are serving they're doing the Sunday card.
Yeah.
I would assume definitely international and probably the premium Transcon. Mm-hmm. So that is my gauge. If we're serving Sundays again, that means we're close to being 100%.
Well, and what did you send me this morning?
So they're also using glassware, and United is also starting to do that this month, and also doing pre-departure beverages, which is very critical.
Yep.
It's going to be water or champagne, or sparkling, which is fine.
Yeah. Something is better than nothing, though, because it's been gone since before. The last time that I had a pre-departure beverage was in Newark. Before
Newark with
on the 777, or no, on the 78-10 when we flew to LA in March 2020.
We had real glasses, and that was a pre-departure drink.
Yeah.
You know, Lufthansa, I'm just using a random European airline. They've been back to normal cutlery and glassware for a while now. I'm glad to see this because it doesn't, you know, red wine does not taste the same in a plastic cup. It doesn't. And coffee does not taste the same. It tastes better in a mug. Mm-hmm. You know, these small things can raise customers' satisfaction by a lot. And it's things that just cost a few dollars. So while we're at it, airlines, you guys used to do the fresh baked chocolate chip cookies. Bring that back immediately. I know all the CEOs are listening to us right now. And because we see, just watch, mark my words, a month from now, hot chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah.
Doug, the last story brings us to this week's Ops Center. We know that most people who purchase airline tickets have no idea what actually happens behind the scenes regarding employee scheduling. Without divulging any sensitive information, can you give our listeners a Cliff's Notes version of crew scheduling?
Yeah, and we talked about it a little bit in the previous topic when we were talking about reserve. And the way it works is let's pick a fictitious airline flying from what city? I don't know. Denver. Let's say the airline's based in Denver and you have 1,000 pilots, you have 1,000 flight attendants, and you have 100 flights a day, something like that. that airline then will look at those pilots and the flight attendants, and they're limited by the FAA to number of hours they can fly in a month, which I believe is 100 for the pilots. I'm not sure what it is for the flight attendants. But this airline will look at that group of 1,000 pilots, and let's say this airline just flies a single airplane type, call it a 737, so that you don't have different pilot groups for different fleet types. What the airline will do is they will release their schedule for the month about 2 weeks ahead of when that month of flying is supposed to start. So if we're talking about December, the airline will release the schedule sometime in early November saying, these are all the trips that we are offering to the pilot group. Now, the airline will set a limit of the number of pilots who get a line and the number of pilots who are on reserve. And usually it's anywhere from 20 to 40%. Just from, you know, it rolls month to month, but anywhere from 20 to 40% of the pilots will be on reserve, which is they're basically a backup for the pilots who are flying the line. As just because I get a schedule right now for December doesn't mean that I'm going to be healthy in December. It doesn't mean I'm going to be available to fly. So if I get a line for December and I'm putting up my Christmas lights that finally came off the boat in Long Beach, and I fall and break my ankle and I can't fly for 2 months.
Right.
I already have a line. I call the company and I say, hey, I broke my ankle. I'm not going to be able to fly for 2 months. All the lines that I had then become what are called open time.
Okay.
Which is where they'll either assign them to a reserve pilot if someone doesn't go in and aggressively pick it up, or I can go in like I did today and say, today is my first day of reserve. I see this trip. The day prior, I'm going to go in and aggressively pick it up. And
you said about 20% of the pilots are reserve.
20 to 40%. It depends on.
Oh my God.
It depends on the fleet. It depends on the month. Around the holidays, they're trying to get more people on reserve. That's how it works. And the flight attendants are very much pretty close to the same. From a days off standpoint, I am very junior. I don't have Thanksgiving off. I'm sitting reserve. I don't have my December schedule yet, but I probably won't have Christmas off because all the senior guys and girls want that time off. And it's all based on seniority.
So we're coming up on Thanksgiving. So when will you know if you're working or not on Thanksgiving?
The day before I start my reserve block, and I start reserve on Wednesday.
So now there's a slight chance you won't get called. Are you going to aggressively pick up a trip, or are you going to wait and hope, you know, there's a chance you might stay home on Thanksgiving?
I haven't decided yet. That'll all depend, because we can look and see how many trips it looks like might be available, and we can see how many people are on reserve. But the company can call and can say, we have a trip in Chicago that's unfilled. Even though you're San Francisco based, we are going to deadhead you to Chicago to pick up that trip. They'll send us anywhere in the system. Mm-hmm. So just because I'm looking and I don't see any trips at my home base doesn't mean that I won't get called. I probably will go in and try and aggressively grab something.
Yeah.
Again, because that gives me that
control
of my schedule. Yeah.
That's good. You know, I can, speaking from an airport operations perspective, for pilots at the airport that I work in, which is big, we'll normally have about 4 737 pilots on airport reserve. So they're ready to be drafted into service immediately. And it's not just people calling in sick. Sometimes it's stuff that's beyond their control. Like their connecting flight is late due to weather or ATC. Mm-hmm. And then we'll use another pilot to cover them. And then as far as my staffing in my office, it's pretty consistent. We have a certain number of people. If I'm going into a snowstorms, I'll add one or two people. During the holidays, it doesn't change much. We've staffed pretty well. The problem I have is I have full staff. It's Christmas Day. Now we're expecting a snowstorm. I need two more people. That is kind of painful to ask people to stay, but I have a good group of people. So if we're really struggling, they will stay and get us through our main departure bank. That's my only risk. Now, for customer service and ramp, they do ramp up their resources, or they offer less vacation. We have something called ANP, which is approved no pay. So that won't be offered because we're were preparing for an operation. And unfortunately, in any airline I've worked for, the number of sick calls goes up during the holidays. So you also have to factor that in.
Yeah. Well, and I talked to our buddy Tyler, who's a ramper in Phoenix, and asked him how his scheduling works. Because, again, your scheduling is more corporate, I guess I would say. Mm-hmm. Like your shifts, you have the same shift every single month.
Yeah.
It's very, very much as if you were working at a bank type thing. Now, I know banks are closed on the weekends, but Drew, your schedule that you have now, you know, is going to be your schedule in 2 months, 3 months, yep, et cetera, mm-hmm, unless something changes, which is a lot different than the flying crew. So I reached out to Tyler, who's the ramper, and asked what his schedule is like. And he said that he's been with his airline for 13 years. He's been able to get Thanksgiving and Christmas off every single year, just based on how they're scheduling.
Yeah, works. And he doesn't have a lot of seniority, as one would have in a legacy airline.
He said he's always able to get vacation time off for those holidays. Mm-hmm. I know he also has been working at night.
Yes.
He'll send us pictures or text us in the middle of the night. And I asked him if that was a seniority thing, if he gets stuck, quote unquote, with the night shift.
Yeah.
And he said, no, that's what's best for his family, okay, with his wife working days.
Yeah.
It works out best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, in the airlines, if you're more senior in general, you are working a morning shift. So from 6 to 2:30 or whatever, all the senior people are on that shift because their schedule is more certain. They know at 2:30 when the PM shift comes in, they're going to go home unless the operation is in meltdown. We try and make this fun. So for the people that are working Thanksgiving, Christmas, if the company doesn't do it, I will do it or the managers will do it. We'll bring something in for them and we'll make it lively. It'll be fun. We won't focus so much on, you know,
on the work,
on the metrics and, you know, mm-hmm, we'll take a little break. We're still going to provide a quality product, but we'll mostly focus on taking care of the employees, taking care of our customers. And during the holidays, Doug, we are more kinder and gentler as far as connections because we want to get everyone home. We might hold San Francisco for 15 minutes just to get one person on.
Everyone on. Or bags.
Or bags if it's not going to, mm-hmm, affect downline connections. So we'll be a little bit more kinder and gentler and not care so much about on time and just try and get everyone home for the holidays because we know, you know, what a nightmare that can be. Bottom line, if you're traveling this holiday season, please take a moment to thank the airline employees along the way because unlike you, they are probably going to be working while you're carving the turkey and having your pumpkin pie.
Yeah. Well, and our buddy Eric, who we've had on the show, he always flies with boxes of candy that he hands out to the flight attendants and to the gate managers and things like that. And I did that last year. I got Starbucks gift cards that I handed out to the flight attendants, mm-hmm, when I was flying for work around Christmas. Cause I know what it's like being away from family and having to deal with the big crowds and everything. Like you said, Drew, just make sure that you take a moment to thank the airline employees if you're going to be flying. And going back to something that you said way early on in the show, only 10% of the people traveling for Thanksgiving are flying, and we need to get that number a lot higher.
Right. We need to attract more
people. Do you know how I think we might be able to do that?
More flights?
Well, with these 19-seat electric regional planes that are coming out in a couple of years, right? Right. Because think about it. If you're going to go visit your family in San Francisco and you live in Fresno, it doesn't make, mm-hmm, sense to fly. It's a four and a half hour drive.
Yeah.
But if they're running all these little regional flights, if we, uh-huh, can get the pilots to fly them,
right,
then it might be easier just to hop on the airplane and fly.
Yeah. Well, hopefully the road traffic will be so bad they'll have to fly. Doug, before we finish up, speaking of flying, you are going to be flying tomorrow?
Today. By the time this episode airs, I'll be back from the trip. But yeah, I mean, it's what, 6:20 in the morning? As soon as we finish recording, I'm going to get the kids out the door and then head to the airport myself.
Take some pictures on your trip because I'll also be traveling. I will be doing...
We haven't done this for a little while, but I was going to ask you at the end, Drew, what's your next trip?
Right, my next trip. This is my first post-COVID work trip. Granted, it's just one night in Chicago. So I'll be flying a 737-700. I'm so excited. Not a Max. It's a 737, but I'm excited. I already reserved my window seat. I'm going to be in front of the engine. And I hope that we are taking off to the north because I'm going to get a beautiful view of the Capitol as we depart Washington. I will put these pictures on the website. Just go to the show notes. And Doug, if you have some cool pictures from your trips, let's put it on the website.
Well, to our listeners, this podcast is your show. So go on our website, nexttripnetwork.com, and let us know what's on your mind so we can talk about it or give us your feedback. You can also follow us on Twitter or Instagram at nexttrippodcast. Please tell your friends about us so we can reach more people who love aviation and travel.
Right. And then this episode will air next Monday before Thanksgiving. We just want to thank all of our listeners, Doug, for we're thankful for you for keeping us on the air, so to speak. And I think even if it's two people listening, we probably still do it, right? Well, mostly we'd just be talking to each other.
Yeah, the two but we people have a lot would be, of listeners. The two people would be you and me listening to the show the next day.
We give each other 4 out of 5 stars, you know?
Yeah.
But no, we are thankful that you listen. We're thankful for your comments. It energizes us to keep doing this podcast. So have a great Thanksgiving, everyone. We'll see you next week. And in the meantime, stay aviation tough.
This has been the Next Trip Podcast. Visit nexttripnetwork.com for information about previous episodes, trip reviews, aviation photos, and other aviation-related content. This is your show, so search for The Next Trip on Twitter and let Doug and Drew know what you want to talk about. Not on Twitter? You can also email them at nexttrip.podcast@gmail.com. Please consider leaving a review wherever you download your podcasts. It will help other listeners like you discover this show.